a little quick review. In Exodus 24, in 24, 10 and 11, when they went up on the mountain, they said, and they saw the God of Israel. In Exodus 24, 11, and they saw God. They saw God. And what's interesting on that is there are visions that people have. There are sightings, I guess you'd say, in the Old Testament and in your Bible. And I want to briefly talk about that. There's a term called theophany, theophany, and another term called Christophany. And when you have these sort of things occur in the Bible, these visions, I guess, these instances of where there's appearances, they're manifestations of God. And it's an interesting thing to think about and to talk about. And here's God. They saw God in a couple of instances in 24, 10, and 11. And I want to expand on that just quickly at the first part of our class here. In Daniel 3:25, and that may be familiar with many of you, in Daniel 3:25, of course, King Nebuchadnezzar is throwing three guys in the fire because he thought they deserved it. And then in 25, he answered and said, look, I see four men loosed and walking about in the midst of the fire without harm. And the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods. 26, and Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the furnace of the blazing fire. And he responded and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come out. And your servants of the Most High God, and come here. These first three I'm going to talk about, or more than three, it's said that that is an appearance of Christ in some circles, and it may be. But their point is there was a fourth person in that fire. And this would be the Christophany that I'm talking about. In Genesis 18, 1 through 33, Abraham dealing with Sodom. And before he came to Sodom, he had a talk. He had a talk with these visitors that he had. And one of them separated himself, and one negotiated with him in reference to who to save in Sodom. And it was back and forth. And there's an appearance before him. The Christophany there. And in Genesis 16, even Hagar, when she was talking about the disposition of her son Ishmael, and that the angel of the Lord there, sometimes that angel of the Lord is associated with that appearance, okay, of a being, okay? And that may be in Genesis 16, 10, 13 through 15. Also, it may be in this verse here, where you have these appearances of an angel of the Lord, and the talk to the Lord. And Moses, again, we all know this from Exodus, that even in talking to the center of the burning bush, there was an appearance there. And it's interesting about that. If you look in Acts 7:30, it calls that the source of that voice, an angel of the Lord. That may be a Christophany, which means Christ. And also in Exodus 23:23, an angel is now leading. We talked about that God was leading them. But now God said an angel is going to lead you. An angel is going to protect you. An angel is going to provide for you. And in Exodus 23:23, and that was interesting there, this angel of the Lord. So there's instances of that. also, we can see that from time to time in our studies and reading, in reference to Moses, you see that a cloud appeared. And the voice of God, or God was present on the cloud, that sort of thing. And it's an interesting thing there about the presence, the close presence, the intimate presence, the face-to-face presence of your God in reference to these prophets and those of his chosen people. So it's an interesting thing. Also, we can think about this called Christophany, and there's an angelophany too, where angels could have appeared. And some of that's in, go back to Sodom. Remember when the three with Abraham, and the two of them went on to be with Lot. So there's the appearance there of those angels with Lot in reference to Sodom. And also in Judges 13, 21, 23. And here's the father and mother of Samson. It's interesting there that they talked to this God there, an angel there. So there's appearances that go back and forth in Scripture. I just want to make that, when you see, saw God, saw a manifestation of God, those things have names to them, okay, to those categories. It's just something to think about as we see this constant attention that Moses has had contact with the Lord, with the angel of the Lord, with manifestations that are in front of him. So it's just something to think about as we go through this. Just a thought on that. And also, one last point in 24, if you notice in 24:14, but the elders, he said, wait here for us until we return to you. He's going up on the mountain for his, the remainder of his 40 days, another 34 days with God. And behold, Aaron and Hur are with you. Whoever has a legal matter, let him approach them. So he's going up on the mountain, and he hasn't received those Ten Commandments yet, the wax. But who's in charge? Who do you leave in charge? Aaron and Hur. Now, how is that significant? How is that significant? While he's up on the mountain, some things are going to occur, aren't they? Down below with the Israelites. The golden calf, those sort of things. And they were in charge. So it's an interesting thing here to understand that while he's gone, that they are in charge on those legal matters, and also for giving spiritual direction to these many people that are below. So just an interesting point there to think about. Now, let's continue now in Exodus 25. Again, Steve taught this last time. Yes, sir. Glory is an interesting word. Yes. Well, it's an interesting thing about seeing God in Exodus 33:20. It deals with that issue, you know, about seeing God. And it's a hard thing to wrap your mind around sometimes, but God cannot be seen. That's why I tend to think the angel of the Lord is what many of these manifestations are. All right? Of course, then you got the New Testament with Paul, and you got the things like that. So it's an interesting thing. But I just want to make you aware of those sort of things, that there are names associated with that manifestations, those phenomena, those appearances. All right, don't let that bother you or confuse you. Now, when we talked last time, and Steve did a good job in the idea of starting with the tabernacle. And when you deal with this tabernacle, you know, this is, it's a structure that they had. They didn't have any permanent facilities. They had seen in Egypt all those buildings and temples and all that sort of thing where their gods resided. And so, and of course, God's looking ahead, too, at the temple to be built, the permanent temple. But something here that's a focus point, something of their faith, something, a place of worship, a center point. And so they needed something like that. So God wanted to establish this tabernacle, okay, which is really tabernacle, just means a residence or dwelling place. Of course, we all know that's not the dwelling place of God, but it's where it was a focal point for them to think about. And people need that. Would you think any less of our worship if we didn't have this building? If we all put our headlights together in our cars and met in the middle of the mall parking lot? Would that be a different feeling for you about religion? I don't know, just a thought, okay? Just a thought. So there was people yearned for that sort of thing, not a place where God resides, per se, but a place where you could have a unified effort, a place where you can concentrate your thoughts without problems with the outside world. And again, a place that you can feel that's special. And again, the funds for this building are special, okay? Are consecrated, if you want to say. But the point is, they're special. And that should give us this special feeling when we enter it, when we're around it, when we work on it. Not that there's anything sacred about it, but it just gives us that feeling of worship, okay? Where God resides. Now, same thing with them. They needed something like that, so the tabernacle. And we know it's just a representation of where God resides and where you can be among God and know things. And he did. He centered a lot of his efforts. When he talked to them, their center of their worship and their sacrifices were built around this. It was an object for them. So, and again, that continued in the temple later on. Now, the tabernacle, again, was a movable structure. And we talked about, yes, ma'am. Not at all. Not at all. People in New Testament met wherever, okay? But it's just an interesting point to realize that God thought they needed a place. They needed a focal point. And more than that, it was such a point to him that he detailed every part of it, which we've seen, every part of it, okay? And continue to change that from the way the building's constructed to the materials to the movement who carried it, what groups did it, on and on and on, not to mention the officiating in this structure, okay, with this structure. And we're going to get into some of that coming up in the priesthood established here today also. So some quick things about the tabernacle, and Steve did an excellent point, the idea of dealing with these from God. These things are given to us and reminders over and over within these verses. And so there's some importance to it. Now, a couple of quick things. Of course, you went over the free will offering. We understand that and the reflection of that today. And from our hearts to give to those things that are special. Those are things that are of God. And that he did dwell among them in 25:8. Yeah, but he dwelt among them, okay, in many places. So it's an idea to dwell in your heart. Dwell in your heart, because that's what God requires of us. Now, you may have, in 25:5, just go over a couple of odd things. When they were gathering all these materials, it says, my version says porpoise skins. Well, that's interesting, okay? I did some research on that word, and even one translation says it's just a type of durable leather. Because there's so much confusion on that. It could be goat skins, dolphin skins, dugong skins, badgers, and it goes on and on. The point is, just like the ram skin and the goat hair, those were things that went on the outside of that inner chamber to protect it from weather, to give it a special appearance, those sort of things. So just an interesting point to think about, and you see that in different translations. Don't let that bother you. God chose certain woods like he did gopher wood, whether it's availability, whatever it was, he certainly didn't magically or miraculously appear. But this was a dense wood in the area, dense wood. And still today even used, I looked that up, the Ikea wood. And it's a good, dense, close, longevity of type wood. So God chose the right wood for that. Of course, these are some large pieces too. That's just that. So, and then now, the Ark of the Covenant. When you deal with the Ark of the Covenant, we see a lot of these internal things dealt with a lot of gold in them. And as you branch out from the inner chamber here, the tabernacle, you're going to see silver used and bronze used and that sort of thing. So those sort of things had a purpose in that.
Now,
and sometimes you see the Ark of Covenant called the chest. And just remember that, because the poles on that, we know that God wanted to carry it a special way. A special way or death would occur. And now, in the next part, in the 25:17 through 22, it's a mercy seat. Now, this is interesting, too, when you deal with the mercy seat. It's that lid, that cover that went on top of the Ark of the Covenant. Some people like to think of that as two pieces of furniture near the Ark, the chest, and then the mercy seat, and that's the way I believe with the two. I don't believe they both had different purposes, different aims in what they were portraying. And so when you think of that Ark of the Covenant, think of a chest that contained what at this time? Nothing at this time, all right? Because he's still up in the mountain getting the instructions from God. But eventually, this covenant would contain three items. What were they? Well, Aaron's rod, it budded, know what you mean? Okay. And the manna, a representation of golden bowl of manna, okay, that represented God's care and concern for them. And what other thing did it contain? The tablets did, the stone tablets. So these are things in that Holy of Holies that was in there. So things to remember. And again, the caring and the confidence they had in the ark when they went into battle and that sort of thing. So it's an interesting thing to think about the majesty of that, the very, very limited access to it, okay, by the high priest on that once a year. So it's an interesting thing. As a matter of fact, if something occurred in there, another person went in or whatever, they would die. They would die. And even if the high priest was unclean in some way, he would die in there. And so it's an interesting thing to think about. God viewed this tabernacle and the enactment of the and the procedures within it, the preparations for the use of it, as very, very, very special. Matter of fact, it's holy. And those sort of things were things that God valued, and death would occur if it wasn't done as he prescribed, as Moses, as being revealed to Moses. Now, mercy seat set on top of it, a lid, some wings on it, that sort of thing. And this is where God resided from time to time, between the wings. I don't quite understand all that. But the point is, when you come in there, God would speak from there. And it's an interesting thing for the instructions to the high priest and that sort of thing. Cherubim. Well, what about cherubim? You see that? You see it occurring here in the mercy seat. You'll see it on the tassels of the high priest around the edges. You'll see it in the curtains and that sort of thing. But what's interesting point, okay? Can we know the cherubim was back about guarded the gates of the paradise, okay? Garden of Eden, keep them back. But it's just an interesting point there. A lot of things, again, we don't understand. I think a lot of people today don't understand it either, okay? But cherubim is some sort of an angelic protection of some sort. And it connoted that, and also when it came into action, it was that way too. So it's an interesting thing with that, to just know about them cherubim, and of course they're a guardian angels of some sort, okay, protection. And it connoted to people that this is a sacred area. This is an area that God is concerned with. This in the high priest on his tassels, on his robe and that sort of thing, those things were important. And it all connoted them to remember. A lot of the things you see in the temple to remember. All right. Now, and then we talk about the table of showbread. In the next part there, beginning in 25:23, yeah, table of showbread. And I go through 25:30. Showbread. What would bread connote? Just like the manna, okay, that you see inside the ark. Those sort of things represented things, caused them to remember. The showbread, the oil there, that sort of thing, was things to keep them remember that there's care and concern of God, and always keep it before them, and to keep it before the priests when they were in here performing their duties. Those sort of things were important, okay? somewhat, but not the same, okay? Somewhat. When we partake of the bread, there's some remembrance going on, not just I got to get it done, all right? There's remembrance. There should be some deep reflection for that. So those sort of things, and God continue today. Now, yes, ma'am. And when Linda's talking about 12 cakes, maybe 12 tribes, okay? It benefited all the tribes. But these cakes were to sit there during the week, and on the seventh day they would be replaced, but on the seventh day also the priest would eat those cakes, okay? And so on this consumption, bring it into your body, those sort of things. So it was a thing they did every week to remember God's provisions for them when they're wandering in the wilderness. Of course, in this time, they got a few more years ahead of them, don't they? All right? They're going to really remember, okay, cakes and that sort of thing, and manna. So it's things to remember that God does take care of you. Just have trust in Him. What He says, He will do. Now, in the next part, you have a lampstand. And interesting on this, this lampstand, we've seen them sometimes called a menorah. You've seen that, okay, even today. And it's hard to find what those different branches represent. Of course, seven, three, three, and one in the center. And, of course, they've got some now that have nine on them, so it goes on and on. But the point is, I was looking for that, trying to find, maybe is there somewhere it says what those seven lighted, and they're not candles. They put oil in there and lit the oil. Of course, the oil was sacred too. But the point is, what did it do? Well, some of them say it represents the 7 days of creation. Some says it represented the burning bush. Some said there were points of knowledge. Of knowledge, yeah, like information, description, perceiving and discovering, and things like that. So it was kind of on and on out there about those menorah and the seven lights that are on it. But I tell you what, if you just take what it says in 25:37, then you shall make its lamp seven in number, and they shall mount its lamps so as to shed light on the space in front of it. I think that's a good way to start what God has said. Shed light. And again, you're inside this enclosed area, these heavy skins on the outside, and closed in with curtains. It's dark in there, okay? And so there was some light for that. Now, no doubt it did represent things on the way it blossomed in the center and that sort of thing, but it's beyond me, okay? I'd be happy if you could see that. But that lampstand is interesting. And I understand, too, that when they got the temple, they added more lampstands. So that's interesting, too, okay, on the deviation there. And apparently God accepted it there, I guess. And so it's just interesting, and it says here in 25:39, it was made of talon of gold. And these lampstands were about 5 foot tall, about 100 pounds of gold. And you see some of these items were overlaid with gold, with acacia wood underneath them. But this was solid gold. And, of course, we remember where the gold came from and the silver and all these materials and goat skins and all that came from the Egyptians. So it's interesting to note that. Now, in the next part, they're the inner tent. And it's just the inner tent. It just protects these five pieces of furniture in this 45 by 15 foot area with two sections in it. And it's just things, how they constructed that, how the loops were made, and it can still gold. And so you can remember that. Now, the outer tent, they went on the outside. Matter of fact, I should ought to do this. That's what I meant to do. Okay? In your supplemental material, I've got a picture here on the diagram of the temple. It's after page 23. Okay, I don't have any page numbers on these, but you can see the outer and then the tabernacle in here with the two sections, and then also it shows on the right side of this how it was the different furnitures, I'm going to call them furniture, that's what's a good name, were placed inside that area. That was 15 by 45 with the Holy of Holies and then the Most Holy Place. So it's an interesting place, the way they were placed. And again, they were described as set on the east side or the west side, north side. Okay. And what's interesting, there was nothing on the east side. That was where the entrances were. Now, I tried to do a lot of research on why the east side, but it just never came up. But it's interesting, the east side, when they built the temple, when they constructed this tabernacle, okay, and the surrounding area, the opening to it was always on the east. Interesting, okay? Graveyards, of course, the same way. Tombstones and graveyard, what? Face the east, don't they? All right? At least on the older ones. So it's an interesting thing there. So, but this picture will give you an idea of that. And so what we're talking about now. So you got it says candlestick there, but it's really lampstand and the altar of incense. We can talk, that comes up in that kind of separated that and the brazen laver was later here. But the Holy of Holies and the mercy seat. And so that, and then also as we're talking about these, I got another picture here in your supplement that right in back of it there that deals with this candlestick. And it deals with the table of showbread and the Ark of the Covenant. And of course, we'll get to the brazen altar, which is outside. So they're interesting things to think about in the furniture that God has prescribed. Now, of course, the outer tent, they did that, and that's when it had the goat hair on it and that sort of thing. And these are substantial because we see the boards inside of them, the way the boards were tied together, and sockets were mentioned last time, and the material there, and did it have the discretion? Did it have any discretion on sockets? No, there's no discretion. God specified the material, how many, placement, dimensions, how they're tied together, everything. That's what God wanted. And it was their job to construct it that way and to maintain it that way. Now, but as we interesting here, when you get to the outer tent, it's kind of changed somewhat to bronze now, from gold to bronze. So again, contact with weather and that sort of thing, again, maybe, okay? But it's just interesting to see that. And that's where you apply those porpoise skins in 26:14. Now, as you get to that 26:15 and forward, you're talking to boards and the bars and the sockets. And this is all how it's, all that fabric and the tent, the boundaries of the tent, that sort of things are set up. And now, when you get to 26:31, kind of going through this, but it's the veil of the tabernacle. The veil of the tabernacle. The veil that separates the Holy of Holies from the other section of that area in the tabernacle. And is there a significance to that? Does the veil of the tabernacle have any significance in the New Testament? Does it come up? Was that just because it wore out, you think? Because it was torn or what? That's right. That's right. It signifies the end of a system. And it signifies the access to the Holy of Holies. God resided over the ark, the mercy seat, a lot of things it signifies, but that's the hope, the great hope we have today, direct access to God, without going through a priest, without going through these people that had to perform these sacrifices, because we have the one true sacrifice. So when you look at the tabernacle, of course, was a copy, but when you look at today, those sort of things have a value to the Christian today, and a lot of that is explained in significant areas in the New Testament, whether it's in the book of Hebrews, the book of Acts, and other scriptures in the New Testament. These men in the New Testament had this history of what is Jewish, what is the worship there, and the close contacts that God had, and the forgiveness through those things that represented forgiveness, the blood, that sort of thing. So when you get to the New Testament, those things, the application of those and the true meaning of those comes out. So, and that's the hope we can have today. So there is value in knowing the value that God put on these back then, the significance they had, and again, the future significance for us today. All right? And till the end of time. So the veil of the tabernacle, and it was ornate and that sort of thing. An interesting point in 26:31, you shall make a veil of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen. It shall be made with cherubim, which we mentioned a while ago, the work of a skillful workman. And this skillful workman occurs a few times through this, and we'll see in a following chapter that these workers, these constructors, these people who put this together, okay, are led by God, have special knowledge of this. So that it's done correctly, okay? Of course, all with the direction and guidance and inspection of Moses. So there's skillful workers. This was a special thing, that was being done. A one-of-a-kind, can I say that? Yes, a one-of-a-kind. And not something reproduced? Well, not at all. But it's so special that God has skilled workers for this. Now, now when you get to the altar in 27, in chapter 27, the altar of burnt offering, of course, it's bronze. Why would you think it's not gold? Why would you think it's... that way, burnt offering. I mean, a lot of sacrifices went through that. Of course, that's not in the inner area anymore, which you can see on your drawing. It's on outside. It's much more exposed. There's a lot of fire going on, a lot of blood going on, a lot of sacrifices, okay? A lot of movement with people. There's a lot of things going on out there on that burnt area. And not to mention the smoke and that sort of thing. So there was... a lot of activity there, so a little lesser material, but still a material that would hold up, that would be have a good look to it, okay, some durability to it, and also something they could repair a little quicker too because of fire. Now, burnt offering, bronze, and then when we get to 27:9, we're just talking about the outer area, okay, which was that 150. The outer court, 150 by 75 that went around it. And there was posts there and tied together with rings, that sort of thing. Again, all specified by God. And some silver came in this. And it varies somewhat. I'm thinking it's around 8 foot tall, but it may be taller than that, that outer area that you have around that. So it's things to think about. Again, all this is specified by God. Now, in the last part of 27, 20, and 21, we talked a while ago about the lampstand and that sort of thing. Well, there's some special oils you do with that. It's special, made specially, not to be duplicated, these sort of things, and also the idea that it needs to be burning, whether it varies in the idea of all daylight areas or it burned all night or both. But the point is, it was continual flame that was to be burning in there. So these are all things specified by God. And that last verse, which we've seen in multiple times, it shall be perpetual statute throughout their generations for the sons of Israel. These sort of things were to be done perpetually. These sort of things were not a one-day occurrence. These sort of things were things they continued all their Jewish life. Matter of fact, up to the New Testament, these sort of things, okay, were to be done by these Aaronic people. Now, wash area, we'll see that in chapter 30, we'll see the laver and that sort of thing. Now, that was quickly on the tabernacle and that sort of thing. Now, so that's the tabernacle. We've got the instructions for it. Moses is still on the mountain. I guess he's writing all this down, remembering it, okay? But the point is, it's going to come to his remembrance later on when he pins all this for us today and for them also. So now, we got what's going to happen now? When you move into Exodus 28, okay, that's the instruction for the physical part of it, I guess you'd say, okay, and the provisions for that. But now we're going to move into who's going to be officiating in there, who's going to be the people that say the right words, have the right attitude, the people that are clean and not unclean. How are they going to utilize this furniture, utilize these bowls and lavers and all these sort of things? Who's going to replenish all that? Who's going to keep it up? Who's going to not carry it here, it's not going to say in these verses, but the point is all that sort of thing. It's the Levites, and especially in the priesthood, okay, the sons of Aaron and the sons of Aaron. And so there's instructions now to begin in that. And what's interesting here that you have this priesthood. Well, I wrote a few things down here. What did a priest do? What are the responsibilities? What sort of things that they had to do? Well, make God's will known, teaching and judgments. We talked a little bit already about judgments, haven't we? Making judgments with people and that sort of thing. And also teaching. Teaching was a big deal. It was a big deal, okay? Still is. And uneducated people go in all different directions. And it builds faith also. They were to conduct the worship. Well, at least there's a lot of that involved. They received and prepared the sacrifices. And again, the general care of the tabernacle, okay? And as a general rule, they maintain and protect the purity of the law. And that's what they do. They're special for these sons of Aaron. Okay? Understand that. Now, and you, as you begin this, you see they had, first of all, they had garments that they had to have. And this is really, a lot of this, all these sort of things, pertain to the high priest. I'm going to skip right now. When you did people other than the high priest, the one who would go into the Holy of Holies once a year, they just wore a white tunic with a waistband and a white cap made of linen. Really everybody but the high priest, okay, wore that. Of course, special garments, specially dedicated, special use, not every day. And they were, again, consecrated in that usage. But the high priest, which a lot of things we see here, and that's that picture here, which I have in the back of your supplemental, which is a pretty good representation of that, okay? And basically, we know that the ephod, okay, that it was constructed, it had a vest on it, front and back, it had 12 stones in it, and you can read about the stones that were put on these, all different kinds of stones. It represented the 12 tribes. And again, to know the, what can I say, the significance of that, it's really not really read. It's something that you have to conjecture, I guess. But the point is, representing the 12 tribes. 12 tribes as they enter these holy of holy areas and prescribed worship that they had. Now, so he had that. And then also, and again, these were according to their birth in 2810 of the sons of Jacob, Israel. And there were breastplates. And let's see. Then on that breastplate, coming up after ephod, you shall mount in four rows of stones. The first row shall be a ruby and topaz and emerald. The second row of turquoise, sapphire, diamonds, and jacinth, agate, and amorous, and beryl and onyx and jasper, okay, all with gold filigree around them, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of things that deal with those 12 tribes and representing the faith that they should have in the high priest officiating for them. So that's interesting on that. And now, 2830 is interesting, and I may get to that in the next lesson. You shall put in the breastplate of judgment the Urim and the Thummim, and they shall be over Aaron's heart when he goes in before the Lord. Aaron shall carry the judgment of the sons of Israel over his heart before the Lord continually. So it's interesting on those two stones, I'll call them, okay, placed behind these 12 stones next to their heart. And I'll deal a little bit of that later on, but you can see Joseph Smith had a connection with that, okay, and his revelations that he received and falsely claimed it. And also there's interesting and mysterious about that. Some things we'll never understand, okay? It'd be a good question to ask one day, all right? But that's, we've come back to that in 2830. Of course, there's always some interesting things. And one quick thing on 2835, and you deal with this apron he had, that it shall be on Aaron when the ministers, and its tinkling shall be heard when he enters and leaves the holy place before the Lord, so that he will not die. Not die. So this is what he did once a year. The high priest went into that holy of holies. We knew the Holy of Holies where the ark is and the mercy seat. And so he had tinkling on it. Now, why did he have bells? Well, there's a lot of conjecture on it. But, okay, but you know he leaves and enters. So he's moving around in there. And it's interesting, I was reading on that. In later years, they would tie a rope to the high priest's foot. Because if for some reason he was unclean when he went in there, ceremonially unclean, he would die. But no one else could go in there because then they'd die. So they'd tie a rope on his foot in case he died, they could pull him back out. So it's interesting. Seems funny, but that's their understanding. You shall die. All right? It's serious business. Of course, Aaron lost a couple of sons, didn't he? Okay? The severity of God. Follow what I say. Follow what I say. So we'll continue with that. Next time, let's see if I got another point on here. No, but the point is, we'll continue that next time, quickly through that, and get in to the next set of lessons, which would be lesson 17. We're on track, more or less, so we'll go through that. Appreciate your time. Thank you very much.